So can you kind of catch me up on what you see as your role in the company? What do you do?
What do I do? System architecture, networking and security. No one in this house can touch me on that.
Okay, that's good to know.
But does anyone appreciate that? While you were busy minoring in gender studies and singing a cappella at Sarah Lawrence, I was gaining root access to NSA servers. I was one click away from starting a second Iranian revolution.
I actually went to Vassar.
I prevent cross-site scripting. I monitor for DDoS attacks, emergency database rollbacks, and faulty transaction handling. The internet, heard of it, transfers half a petabyte of data every minute. Do you have any idea how that happens? It's not magic, it's talent and sweat. People like me ensuring your packets get delivered unsniffed. So what do I do? I make sure that one bad config on one key component doesn't bankrupt the entire company. That's what I do.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're gonna learn today.
Innovate like a startup, deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's gonna be a great day.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Oh yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Aero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 85. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Aero, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, sir?
I'm feeling good, but like in a consistent way. I've switched from my morning caffeine buzz to cold brew coffee.
Ooh.
It doesn't seem to quite give like the jolt of just straight black, you know, hot coffee does, but
yeah,
we'll see if I actually give an endorsement for the brand later in this episode, whether it works or not.
Well, I don't want to talk about coffee because I'm in Italy and there's no competition. The coffee here is, there's nothing like it, man. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, the Starbucks on the corner are better over there, you mean?
Yeah. Don't even get me started on coffee because here, like if you even try to ask for one of those dessert coffees that they serve in Starbucks, they give you the craziest look. It's like, what? You want what in your coffee? But John, listen, I thought you were going to say that you were, you know, just pounding away at all of those VMworld sessions that you've got ready to go, right?
Oh, that's what the coffee's for. I've been awake for, you know, 52 hours straight, you know, kind of tweaking out, working on my presentation. So,
oh, yeah. For those of you going to VMworld, we're going to be doing quite a few sessions in our team. John and I are going to be co-presenting on a couple of things. We're doing a session on vSAN Support Insight. I think that one is called We Got You Covered, the Top Operational Tips for vSAN Support Insight. And we're also doing another one on what's new in vSAN. So you'll want to check that one out as well. I'm doing a virtual volumes deep dive, and I'm also doing one on vSAN data availability. And John, I think you're doing a couple of more, right?
I'm doing an IOPath deep dive with good Pete on our team, not evil Pete, you know, Fletcher. But it's going to be kind of a nerdy look at some of the ways that vSAN is smarter than you realize and how it solves problems you didn't know existed. So.
Yeah. I like it. Well, I will be sure to leave a link to all the different sessions that we've got going on at VMworld. We'd love to see you there. John and I will be bringing podcast swag. So if you're there and you find us, we've got a gift for you. And but hey, listen, let's not talk about VMworld. Let's talk about networking. John, you and I went to Denver a couple of months ago, and we got to meet up with the support team, GSS, that's out in Denver, and great bunch of guys. And we definitely thought at that moment it would make for a really cool episode to understand what these guys go through when they troubleshoot networking for VMware customers. And so with that, we're going to be bringing on one of the escalation engineers at the GSS office over there, Brock Yanda. Brock, how you doing?
Doing all right. Good morning.
Good morning to you, my friend. So you have been in GSS for how long now?
Going on 2 years or a little bit over.
Nice, nice. And so from what I hear, that's like the scariest job to have. It's like, you know, because there's not a lot of reward. I mean, everyone that calls you is either upset, and the best you can do is make them less upset. Is that true?
Yeah, we don't see people's best days. They don't call me to tell me how good the product's working.
Yeah.
I don't know. I occasionally would call sometimes and be like, hey, I've got this question or this thing's going on. And people would be like, oh, that's like a super easy question, John. In fact, you just made my shift because I can solve that in 30 seconds. Like, I feel like I was sometimes with my stupid questions that I should have known better. Like, I actually, everyone's day was made better. But
yeah.
I don't know. That's just me. Pete must have only called with hard questions and chaotic outages.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to share how many times I've made that call and you know, got on the phone with a support engineer that saved my butt, and then I just turned over to my employer and been like, oh yeah, I fixed it. We're all good. You know, I'm the hero.
Yeah. So we send an email to you, not your manager. So, yeah.
Thank
just
God.
That.
Yeah. You're making many people out there look like heroes. So congratulations mm-hmm. to you.
Thank you.
So yeah, John, we want to talk about network outages and maybe even do a little bit of a best practices. So why don't we start with the very high level? What are some of the top causes of outages that are preventable?
So generally speaking, there's about two different ways that most outages happen. There's usually outages that happen based off configuration. So that would be like your network configuration, you know, how, you know, what's plugged into what's the VLANs, all that stuff. What's your storage like? Is it configured, you know, fiber channel SCSI,
yeah.
NFS? Basically upgrades. We did, you know, a configuration change where we added a new product. We upgraded vCenter. We upgraded new switches. Now everything doesn't work. Then the second one would be environmental. So we had a hardware failure, power. You know, we had some weird switch things happened, failovers happened, things like that. Those can all be prevented by general configuration changes, verifying plans before upgrades, you know, hardware redundancy, power redundancy, all that kind of stuff. But that's generally what we see in GSS. It's a very large portion for networking. And a large part of our job is to vet and verify all of those configurations and then recover when those things happen.
So are people making these changes in production? Because, I mean, I guess, I don't know, I guess I've been in dealing with larger enterprises for a while. To me, it seems like everything goes into pre-prod first, and then you test it, and then you even in pre-prod environments, you've got to do change control, and then you have to write like a book on why you want to make this change and justification with links to, you know, some best practices and support before you can even get in to make these changes. Is that not the case? Are people just making changes in production?
So that's all, you know, normal practices, yes. But the problem is that requires budget, time, people, research time. Large portion of those, you know, people are under deadlines. They call me and they go, I have to get this done by Monday.
Ah.
Or 50,000 people don't get their service or whatever it is. So it can be timeline, budget, all that types of stuff. Large portions are unseen. So, you know, you did an upgrade and you went to 6.5, but your hardware has drivers that don't support it, right? Or you run into a crazy bug because when you upgraded, your storage actually needs a firmware upgrade to actually work with ESXi, and that was unseen or undocumented. There's large portions of drivers and stuff that maybe don't get readme notes or, you know, firmwares that, you know, not all are all known until you get to those high level, say, escalation. Like, I know a bunch of drivers, but, you know, you didn't talk to HP fully. You talked to Dell all the way to the very level 3 that knows about the 14 bugs with that specific version.
Yeah.
So
you raise a very interesting point here. One, Pete, I came from the church of YOLO where you just, you know, smaller businesses, smaller budgets, you know, you yelled YOLO in the data center and hit up remediate all and firmware update manager, and then went to go find a sandwich. You didn't even stare at it. You didn't care. If it's an outage, we'll fix it. But the other thing here that Brock makes an excellent point on is that there's a lot of these things. One, when you upgrade one thing, there's kind of a cascading effect. And on the vSAN side, that's part of why we've, you know, integrated into update manager, you know, the ability to track driver and firmware on HBAs. And, you know, we're trying to take on more of the lifecycle bits. There's a lot of stuff of if you upgrade this, you also have to upgrade these other two things. And more importantly, even if you did go hunt down the release notes, which I love reading release notes, they help me fall asleep at night. But you'll often find that the real release notes that get published are not the real release notes. In fact, the HBA industry was terrible about this for a while, of just publishing release notes that said, very important, high critical fix, no changes, no changes. They just wouldn't document them. The other thing you'll notice is sometimes vendors will understate. They'll say, oh, could cause slight performance issues. That can translate to horrific production outages that will, you know, eat packets and babies.
Wow.
So unfortunately for customers, in some cases, just the release notes are obfuscated. So that's why these HCLs exist, and that's why you need to go hunt all this stuff down.
Yeah, most adapters readme notes are redacted. I've seen them personally be redacted for what they were supposed to be, as well as some readme notes don't have anything for all releases of the entire adapter. There's none.
Wow.
So. Yeah, there'll be 50 updates and they're all blank, and it's like,
yes.
Huh, I wonder what they were working on.
Yeah, they've skipped 4 generations of driver levels, but no notes.
So how do you prevent that? How is that preventable then? Just read and then, but if there's nothing there to read, then just do it in a test environment or?
Absolutely. Like large portions of people do testing. And that's really recommended. And then that's why we have things like in vSAN, you have like HCI Bench to go beyond production level load to vet everything that it can actually work. So in my mind, I usually keep about quarterly checks on the drivers and stuff like that. Like I think, yeah, I got like three or four devices that pretty much have gotten updated three times since January. So that's a pretty fast release schedule. It's not like Windows updates. They don't release them unless there's full versions, like released like every 2 years. But most of the time, those are all bug fixes. They're not like, you know, they're not Windows updates. They're not going to break them. They're usually there to fix a lot of issues. So
one thing to keep in mind is if you're in a smaller environment for testing is, well, not everything can be tested this way. What we used to do is if we had a 5-node cluster, we would go patch one of them, patch the BIOS, patch the firmware, patch the drivers, run it for a week and see if anything blew up. Mm-hmm. You know, vMotion, maybe use DRS to stick some lower priority workloads to that host, you know, run some other bench tools or things like that. But that way you can at least kind of dip your toe in the water with one host on those new releases.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a customer to prove a problem to me with a card we can talk about later, that he would pull up a script, get CentOS boxes, put out 250 on four hosts of VMs, have them all ping each other, and then report back to him if they ever had a loss in a script. and it worked every time flawlessly, and he could reproduce the issue every time.
So my question is if you could somehow pass through. So ping, I did not realize this until recently on my Mac, and I think this works on Linux, is if you do a dash A, capital A, I believe it makes an audible noise whenever a ping fails. And yeah. So
I've never heard of that. That's crazy.
I did not know that either. I only knew lowercase A. Who knew?
Well, there's lowercase A, which I think pings if it goes through, and I may have this backwards. You can clean this up later. But yeah, it's one of them will always, every ping, it'll make a noise. And the other one, it noises when you fail. And so I'm just trying to imagine the sound of 200 VMs configured that way, all, you know, blasting over a speaker or something. But
yeah, no, and it was pretty interesting for him to do that. Granted, you know, I don't always use pings as a indication of drops because it's the least guy in the totem, like the
right.
Lowest totem pole. He gets dropped first no matter what. And even in ESXi, we drop it. 1 in 100 pings if it comes in over 200 pings a second, like it'll just drop ICP. So grain of salt, but it does indicate some kind of issue, which is good. So we can use it sometimes like that in certain situations.
Makes sense. So what do you think are some skills that vSphere engineers could probably learn to help troubleshoot networking? Like, are there any tools or features that can be turned on to like isolate issues? Or I would imagine understanding a little bit about the OSI model would probably help, right?
Absolutely. So the OSI model is very important in us, and especially when we have all these products like NSX and stuff like that, when we start going up the stack. But typically in vSphere, we use layer 1 and 2 only. The virtual switch is a layer 2 forwarder. It doesn't do anything else. There's some things like, you know, traffic shaping or security, which applies a filter. But if those aren't enabled, it doesn't do anything with the packet. So in that, you would need to know the OSI model to understand like ARPs and MAC addresses and how that works in layer 2. For physical issues, like I'm sure you've had cases where you're like, oh, the network card doesn't show up because the drivers and firmware or something like that. That's layer 1 connectivity.
Yeah.
Or you negotiated a speed wrong and then the network adapter shows a red X. Like that's physically down. So those are where you start. And then you go to layer 2 where you're just forwarding. It's just layer 2 forwarding. We don't usually use, we don't have a MAC table in the virtual switch. It's just a port forwarder because we know the VMs and their MAC addresses. So we basically just go, that packet goes to this VM. It's that port to that port. It's pretty easy. For my general troubleshooting, what I usually start with is the basic understanding of how everything on the ESXi host can affect that VM. Storage, you have latency of storage, you're going to have latency in packets or any kind of your applications. So what I usually start out with was ESX top. It's like Linux top, except you can look into CPU contention, ready times. You can look in network. And you can see drop packets. That's drop packets on the vSwitch. If you're losing it there, you got serious performance problems.
Yeah.
That also, you can see where the traffic's going. If you see, you know, I have 4 VM NICs and all of them are sitting at 10 gigs of like receive traffic, you're like, oh, you probably have a broadcast storm coming into this, you know, host. Stuff like that. Then, you know, if you, there's a lot of good articles on like Yellow Bricks and stuff about like, ESX Top, and we have our own KVs on it. But like, then you hit like U and go to disks, right? Disk average latency, if that goes over 20, you're going to drop a packet. Things like that. So that's where I start. I'll log into a customer's environment, take about 5 minutes through there, just see how their environment, that host is running. And I can generally tell where your problem is right around there, just at least where to start looking.
Then, so you don't start looking at logs first. You just want to get in and just see what you see.
Yeah, because I can pretty much tell how your environment's running. So like, you know, someone calls in and they're like, you know, I have a VM that's performing terribly, or, you know, I have high ping times. I go in there, or like I need more bandwidth because my VM isn't running fast enough or whatever, right? I look at networking, hit N for networking, and I look at their VM, find it, and it's only transferring 1 megabit of traffic, send and receive. Yeah, that's really high load. I need to beat their channel and get 10 gigs. Like, no, you don't. So there's something else going on. Then I go to storage and you have a 200, 300 millisecond, like a millisecond latency to your storage back. Like, that's going to cause the applications to fail. And that's, I don't need logs. I don't need anything for that. That's live stats coming out of that whole entire host for every VM, disk, write, CPU, memory. You could even, I think vSAN's got one too. So you can see quickly how vSAN's kind of quickly running. That's where I start. If you learn that, you'll be way ahead of the game. Then we have like ESX CLI commands. That's where you can dive into the network adapters, dive into the HBAs, and get the stats out of them, see what they're actually doing at a physical layer. You can see LECP status, vSwitch configuration, you know, VM kernels, all that stuff, and grab the drivers and firmware and all that stuff. There's plenty of documentation on that. We have enormous amounts of ESX CLI commands. They're everywhere. For tools, we like to use VMK ping. It's a little bit more advanced than ping because on a host has interfaces like vSAN, vMotion, management.
Oh, yeah.
All those interfaces. If you do VMK ping, you can specify one of those interfaces, specify size. Say you have MTU issues, specify MTU 8972, send it to your storage. If it's blocked, you probably got, you know, MTU issues, it's not configured right. You can use Netcat. So if you use Netcat, you kind of want to be careful with Netcat. Like, it's like, you know, normal Linux boxes, you Netcat, like, I want to check a port. You want to know on a working host or working vCenter if it'll actually respond, because a large portion of the ports aren't actually open or they will not respond. So you can check, you know, ports. So if you want to go layer, you know, 4 and above, that's Netcat. So you can test all that from, you can do it running from, you know, ESXi host to vCenter or ESXi host to each other, depending on if you have replication or anything like that. That's a really good tool. Then when we get down to my wheelhouse, when it comes to like, we've done all that, we've checked all the logs, we've checked everything, you still have a problem. We're going to go into packet capture, UW. It's one of our utilities that we have on the host. I think we custom wrote it a little bit and tweaked it a little bit. That utility, if you dive deep into it, it can capture at every single point. And there's about 8 or 12. You can go inbound, outbound at all of those points. I can do it at the network adapter. I can do it at the vSwitch coming out of the network adapter. I can do it at the DV filter if you have NSX. I can do it after that. I can do it when I actually put it into the VM and hand that packet to the RX filter on the VM.
Wow.
So I can see exactly what I'm throwing into your VM and what it's coming out of it. Large portion of our cases will actually end up doing that. If you have a guest OS issue with like a security software or whatever, we'll throw ARPs into there and then it won't throw them back. It just that's our wheelhouse. And if you're doing packet captures, you got serious problems usually. So, and then what I usually recommend for my vSphere engineers, because I train my guys, is there's a couple Pluralsight videos. If you look up just, you know, VMware, it's real quick, like 2 hours, you know, general networking, then there's advanced troubleshoot networking, and then foundations. And those are 2 hours each by some pretty good guys.
Yeah. And I'll put links to those on the show notes of this podcast. But I think I noticed, help me out with this, John. I remember when we were in Denver, one of the guys there showed us, I think it was Brad, showed us like this this chart for sort of troubleshooting, for walking up the different layers of the OSI model. And that was sort of like part of the troubleshooting that the engineers do. Is that kind of what you're explaining, or is there a name for that? What is that process?
Oh, you're thinking that's the vSAN team in GSS. I have that.
We call that in networking a top-down approach, basically. So what we're basically talking about there is that, say you had two VMs on a host and a single port group with no network adapter, right? Those two VMs could communicate with each other without a network adapter. So if you did a ping from that VM to the other VM on the same host, same port group, you don't involve anything physical. You're sitting in memory the whole time. So if that works, your VM's working, the adapter, VMXNet3 or E1000 is working, the vSwitch is working, and the other VM is working. And that can pretty much eliminate VMware almost entirely right there. If that works, you're good on VMware. And then we can go down and do the next step, which is to step down, which we go across your layer two switches, right? So we go move that VM to another host, same port group, same subnet. That'll go down your switch and back into the other host with a network adapter. And if that works, we know your layer two is good. And then from there, we go to one step out again, which is another port group, different subnet, which requires your layer three router. If that doesn't work, we know your router's bad or it's not routing right correctly. So that's kind of how we step out in networking. If your same host, same port group doesn't work, you have drastic problems inside the guest OS, or, you know, something's bad, real bad.
So from a, let's talk about what you plug into, and kind of, obviously, you know, a switch is a switch until it's not. What are we seeing in terms of what all problems do you identify sometimes with the physical network?
So large portions of our cases are going to be physical. So like drivers on the cards, because they're getting very advanced, it's going to be switch MAC address tables, not following, you know, because it is virtual. So we move network adapters, which is not normal, right? So like before, you don't usually move a physical Windows box to another port, you know, real fast. So that can confuse some switches. So there's some bugs in the MAC address tables. Or very commonly, if you've ever had a problem where you're like, I vMotioned a VM and now I can't ping it.
Oh, I know that one. I know that one.
I disconnect the network adapter and reconnect it, and it works. Right?
VLAN drops. So.
Basically, yes. So at any time, you can be connected to any active adapter that you have in that port group. It can be on VMNIC 0 or 1, which could be two completely different switches, which usually are. So you could have one switch not configured for a VLAN and the other one that doesn't even have that VLAN. And then, yeah, you attach to it, it's down. That's very common.
Yeah, the VM that ghosts in and out, you know, it's like, okay, do we either have a MAC address conflict because someone cloned something they shouldn't have improperly, or do we have a case where one of the ports isn't trunked properly for that VLAN or configured? Or
And then after that, it's even sometimes even more upstream. So a large portion of these environments are redundant. So they have, you know, two upstream Nexus 7Ks or whatever they are, and then those guys are VPC'd together, right? So they're connected to each other. Large portion of people don't understand that at some point, if I'm on, say, the left side on switch one on one host and I'm on switch two on the other host, the pathing can go up switch one across to switch two and then back down. If that VPC doesn't have that VLAN, it will drop. And that's very common.
Yeah. There's a lot of places. I remember once I crashed a 911 system, actually. I vMotioned something somewhere and discovered, oh, VLAN 20 is not on that, was never connected to that host. Oops.
Like, yep.
Yeah. And it sailed away.
Well, and I do know there is some, if you move VM kernel ports, there was some built-in verification for the VDS, at least, I think, to check.
Yeah, that happened after 5.5, I think. vCenter, if it loses communication to your VMKs for management, it will roll back the configuration change. It like tries to ping, and if it loses connection to the host after a change, the host will revert that change.
So what are people calling into most frequently? Like, what is the one where when you get this call, you're like, ah, another one of these?
That one is like network adapter not seen. vMotion VM doesn't work. And then performance, packet loss, etc. And then the fourth one would be like, I just upgraded and now blank's broke. those are pretty much the four like straight up identifiers. Other than that, there's a very classic one. If you ever have Cisco devices, it's called IP gratuitous ARP. Basically, the VM will have a static IP address, and if you reboot it, the switch will generously tell you that you're a duplicate IP address, and then Windows will drop your static IP address.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. So Microsoft, I think it was around Windows 8 or 7, they put in a thing basically to hold down the, if it detects it's a duplicate Mac, Windows will basically say, I'm going to shut up now and go crawl in the corner.
Yeah, that's a very common one. and the graciously, the Windows box will say, yeah, sure, I know I'm a duplicate, I guess. And then the switch will tell it that it is because we're virtual. So we do that switching, right? So we go over from VMNIC 0 to VMNIC 1. Of course, the switch is going, no, you're back there. What are you doing? And then gratuitously tell it that it's wrong.
The other case where I've seen that is a DHCP server that was not following the RFC. It was a Cisco Linksys device when they briefly owned Linksys. It would hand out the same IP address multiple times when it exhausted the pool. And so you would get duplicate IP addresses on the network. And Windows at least is friendly. It does have a little pop up in the bottom right corner of like duplicate IP address detected. Yeah. Contact your network administrator.
So that's a common one. The dropout one with a disconnecting, reconnecting of the network adapter is very common. That's just common. It can be a lot of things, but most of the time it's just you don't have VLAN access. Then the packet loss one, that's always tuning, checking drivers and firmware. The network adapter not seen, that is always 100% not VMware issue. It's drivers, firmware, you're using the wrong SFP, you're not in the right, duplex setting or something. It's not plugged in right, it's not even supported, it's all physical.
You're not holding it right. It's one of those.
But what does VMware do in that case? Because I don't think it's like, I doubt VMware is like, that's not our problem, call somebody else. I mean, do you end up being like an expert in hardware or drivers for other vendors?
Oh, absolutely. I say I don't work for VMware sometimes because I have to do so much hardware stuff. We usually check drivers and firmware, see if it shows up in the LSPCI, which is the PCI slot, which is recognized by the motherboard, but not initialized by the driver and firmware if it's in the ESXi CLI list, basically. When we look for the network adapter, if it doesn't show up there, it didn't get initialized. We can then go into the boot log, boot.gz, it's in the var run log, and then look for the VM NIC in question or the PCI slot number. And that'll usually tell you firmware failed to load it, unsupported SFP, stuff like that. It'll usually tell us what's going on.
I love SFP compatibility where the SFP has to be coded to the switch it's going to talk to.
Exactly. It's got a whitelist on it. It's fun.
And what's nice is a lot of this is pulled into vSAN support insight. So if a customer has a transient issue, which are my favorite, and I'm sure Brock's, hey, this blew up yesterday, but it's fine today. Please troubleshoot. It's like, what changed? What happened? So one, any changes in the environment. So let's say, you've got Tim, the destroyer of network uptime, who went and mucked with some VM kernel ports. That actually gets included in the phone home. So we can yell at, we can be like, hey, it looks like you actually did make changes. The other thing is also packet loss is captured. And so that's actually captured for those physical interfaces and things like TCP retransmits, and kind of some lower level stats. So not only do we have this from a point in time being able to go look at stuff in ESX top, but we can actually go back in time with vSAN support insight and say, hey, what was the host doing 3 days ago?
Yeah.
And so that way you can see if it's a trend, if it's a common problem, if it was just a burst of an issue. And there's a lot of really cool improvements coming in this space. So I'll use the Chad Sackett phrase, watch this space. So, but yeah, giving that whole idea of you can phone home, networking information to GSS, that's really awesome.
Oh, yeah. So I know you've been doing a lot of troubleshooting in VMware environments, but I'm curious, what are some of the key things that, customers or administrators need to consider, especially physical environments that are moving into virtual environments or troubleshooting maybe for the first time in a virtual environment? I'm imagining that the things to consider are very different because it's not physical anymore.
Absolutely. So unlike a physical environment, we don't have loops. We don't use STP. There's a lot of things in physical environments that are required because of how they work, where we don't have on a virtual switch, we don't have any MAC address tables. We use port IDs. We use filters to do like security and VLAN filtering. But if those filters aren't there or they're not configured, they're not there. So it's very simple packet forwarding. I call it a very dumb switch. It's not like a physical environment. And to go into a virtualization environment from physical, that distinction needs to be made.
But is it easier to troubleshoot in a virtual environment, or is it easier to troubleshoot it for a physical environment?
I would say so, because we're in software. I have a bunch of tools, and like talking before, the troubleshooting methods that we have can easily identify where the problem is. I can go down that top-down approach and find that if it's layer like in the vSwitch, or if it's actually in the physical, or if it's layer 3, it's very easy to troubleshoot. The packet captures show me exactly what's being copied out of memory, out of the drivers, or out of the path in the IO.
Yeah.
I see exactly what's being put into your VM and what's coming out. So it makes it very easy. Whereas before, if you're on a physical environment, you got to span a port, you got to contact Cisco to figure out how to do that. If it's a chassis, even worse, right? Like you have to do a bunch of stuff to try to find where the problem is. And all you really have is counters. Where we have a bunch more tools.
Well, and part of that's, I mean, if you think about it, we own the code 100% of, you know, where that packet goes from the guest all the way from, you know, particularly if it's paravirtual driver set, all the way to, you know, handing off to the driver of the physical NIC and the host.
Yeah.
A traditional switch, people may not realize this, but one, a lot of the switch vendors, they don't actually manufacture their own ASICs. They may or may not manufacture their own switching operating system. Tons of the libraries that are involved in those switches are actually, in many cases, licensed from third parties. There's just a lot more vendors and things if you really peek under the hood of the, you know, how the sausage that is, you know, physical switching is made, that's involved. And it's a lot more complexity. And there's a lot of extra features, as Brock kind of mentioned, things like spanning tree and CAM tables, MAC address tables, that are designed because of the non-deterministic of you have no clue what's going to get plugged into or if that switch has to operate cleanly with another switch versus the VDS is the VDS, you know?
Absolutely. As an escalation, I talked to the guy who wrote the code that wrote the TCP stack, you know, like, or, you know, whoever wrote it.
Yeah.
The new features that you're talking about, the new features that you're seeing, I talked to the guy who wrote it, you know.
And what's his name? Just kidding.
What's his email? Yeah. Can we list his cell phone number? No. Yeah. I did have one question, and I always say this. Ephemeral port groups.
Ephemeral
port groups. Let's talk about those for a sec. I understand some people sometimes get scared of the virtual distributed switch. You know, they sometimes are worried about what happens when a vCenter's down. What do we do about that? How do we prevent, you know, any situation from causing problems?
Okay, so let's talk about that and give you some backstory about, you know, how the DVS kind of works, because that's kind of what you need to know before you talk about ephemeral. The DVS is it lives in vCenter. It's created by vCenter. It is a database that lives in vCenter. It is then pushed to the host that you add to it. So you add an ESXi host to vCenter. It then pushes down a proxy switch to that host so that if vCenter is down, it can reboot and be fine, right? So when you talk about ephemeral binding and stuff like that, what that is there's three of them. It's static, dynamic, and ephemeral. That's a port group binding. A binding in this instance is the same thing as if you were to plug in, say, a physical box into a switch. We are attaching a VM to a port. We are attaching that VMK to a port. Remember, we don't have MAC addresses, we have ports. So we're plugging into those ports.
Yep.
Now, the way those are allocated is by vCenter if you have static or dynamic binding. So when you go to ephemeral, what you do is you no longer require vCenter to change those ports. The host can do it. Ephemeral does cost a little bit of overhead because the host has to spend a CPU cycle to find the port or whatever to assign itself. The problem that John's talking about is when you have, say, an HA failover or you change something and then you lose connection to vCenter, you no longer can go, hey, vCenter, what port should I be on? Or say vCenter's on that host that doesn't have communication to vCenter. It goes, hey, vCenter, what port should I put you on? And vCenter can't communicate back. So it's kind of a catch-22 chicken and egg situation.
Yeah.
vCenter's down. So what we usually have to do in our troubleshooting, which pretty much I get like two of these a week, vCenter's down because of some issue, something happened. I have to rip a network adapter or get a network adapter that has access to the vCenter network or management, put it on a standard switch, then put that NIC on there, put vCenter on there, then I can boot it up correctly. If you have a SQL database, that's got to be pushed out too. It's got to be pushed to that standard switch. So once we restore connectivity, then we can go, okay, now vCenter, please give us a port to put you on the DVS and you migrate it all back. This gets complicated when you have like LACP or any kind of link aggregation. I have to break that to get it back to standard switching. It's really annoying. Usually takes a call from 20 minutes to about 2 to 3 hours to start doing this. Ephemeral binding, we recommend you at least have a port group with the access to vCenter or the VMKs for management, at least in the background. Like just configure it, leave it. You don't have to put anything in it. But in these edge cases, the host will be able to change vCenter into that port group. You'll see an error if it's not ephemeral. That's by design, and you'll see that usually. But in this case, you can just go boop right in that ephemeral binding port group. It's done. No problems. vCenter's up.
In case of emergency break glass is kind of what you stage those for.
Yeah, I believe in the KB it says in recovery issues only, or, you know, formal documentation. But yes, it's a very common problem. It happens at HA. It happens at, you know, port assignment. It happens whenever you do that. Anytime you V motion, you do another port assignment. Anytime you do, you know, disconnect, reconnect adapters, or you do removals, re-adding, just anything to do with the network adapters. And when it's attaching to that switch, you plug it into a different port. If that communication or verification is lost, ephemeral bindings where you need to be to get it back. And it's a generator of cases for sure.
Well, and I like though that that's an option to, you know, solve that problem rather than historically what I'd see people do, which is go create an entire separate standard switch just for the management bits and, you know, burn some ports unnecessarily that could have been used for something more useful.
Absolutely. I mean, personally, I always recommend anything you're not going to change to put on standard switches. If you're never going to change it for the, you know, 3 years that you have that host or more, which a lot of people do, it never changes. So once you do it once, it's done. You can do it with host profiles or whatever if you're doing large deployments. But other than that, please give us an ephemeral binding so we can recover your vCenter. That's bare minimum. Just keep it in the background.
Well, you know, for me, I always hear like, you know, best practices, right? When they say best practice, if it's a best practice, then why isn't it configured that way by default? And why are there other options? And it seems to me like this would be one of those examples where it shouldn't even be an option. That should just be configured and available in every environment.
I like your thinking there. Almost like it's just automated to create that.
Hmm.
Let's see before we get in trouble. You know, the other thing is I do like with the VDS is you get LDP, you get full send and receive support, you get network IO control. There's other benefits. So anything that lets me say, okay, I can now just standardize on the VDS with this one neat, you know, configuration tip to try to make this sound a little clickbaity, that's good by me.
Yeah, it's highly recommended. Always.
Thanks. Well, Brock, thanks for joining us today. This has been a wealth of information on network troubleshooting. I really appreciate that. And I will be sure to add all of the links to the KBs as well as those training classes that you mentioned on the show notes of this podcast. John, Brock, either of you, any closing thoughts on this podcast before we take off?
To wrap this up, it sounds like, you know, VMware people need to learn a little bit more networking. Networking people need to learn a little bit more VMware. You know, everyone also needs to update their drivers and firmware, create their ephemeral port groups, you know, spay their animals, you know, the typical, you know.
Verify your configuration upstream, all that stuff. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, fire off, do some HCI bench on the network and stare at the network before you go to prod.
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, what I always say is don't look at it as like a black box, because if people look at it like that, they're usually typically easy to blame it. But it's really just a dumb switch. It really doesn't do all that crazy stuff, and people think we do. And that's a large driver of the attitude towards our support, for networking at least. And a large portion of that stuff is out of our hands. It's your physical switch. It's your physical card that we do not control.
I like it. All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to Brock for geeking out on network troubleshooting. We're back next week, but until then, ciao for now.
Guys, the network's down.
Not again!
With all due respect, John, I am head of IT, and I have it on good authority. You can break the internet.
I am profoundly dumbfounded.
Enough of this jibber jabber.